KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the African Hip Hop Caravan Benefit Show, August 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup in Portland. All ages are welcome to this benefit show featuring Mike Crenshaw and Rashid Jamal to raise funds and awareness for their November trip to various countries in Africa. Again, that's a benefit show for the African Hip Hop Caravan on Saturday, August 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup, 9022 North Newman Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Peace.
It's the HIP to the HOP, it's the movement. Hip Hop Caravan is the HIP to the HOP, it's the movement. Hip Hop Caravan.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland. 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Concert. And I'll be joined in just a few minutes by my co-host, Jen Chavez. Jen will be talking this morning with Lila Janelle, a journalist and critic with PQ Monthly. Jen and Lila will be talking about how the new Roland Emmerich movie, Stonewall, erases trans women of color from the history of the Stonewall riots of 1969. And I'll be joined by a couple of filmmakers who will be featured in this year's Portland Film Festival. But first, we have filmmaker, artist, and impresario Vanessa Rennick on the line. Vanessa is a founder of the Oregon Department of Kick-Ass, and she'll be hosting an event this Sunday at the Hollywood Theater called Jailbreak for Joe Gibbons. Vanessa, welcome to the film show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, So tell us about this event that you've put together. There's an amazing story behind it about Joe Gibbons, the bank-robbing filmmaker.
Joe Gibbons, first and foremost, is an incredible artist, great filmmaker, and he is serving 1 year in Rikers right now for robbing a bank on the East Coast. He was homeless at the time, and I don't really know what his motivation was for robbing the bank, but he was videotaping it. His life, he's been working for many, many years on a long film called Confessions of a Sociopath that he stars in, and it may have been fodder for the new film. It may have been him just desperate. I don't really know the answer to that, but I am going to be showing three films that he has made, a wide-arching view from really early work to newer work, including Confessions of a Sociopath, on Sunday night.
So these are sort of avant-garde works. I mean, you can't get much more avant-garde than filming your own bank robbery, I guess.
I guess so, yeah.
So tell us about, this is also a bit of a fund-raising event for Joe's fund, for Joe's defense fund. Is that correct?
Well, some other people made an Indiegogo for Joe since he went in homeless, and when he gets out, he won't have any money, and some monies were raised, and I am, it's kind of like the Hollywood Theater, I thank them very much for letting us have this event there, and just the cut of the door that an artist would usually get for showing their work at a theater is what will go towards Joe's fund. I'll add it, send it off to the Indiegogo people.
So how can people find out more about this particular event and more about what's going on with Joe Gibbons?
There is a website for Joe Gibbons, if you Google him, that has lots of information about his films and his works. He's been in four Whitney Biennials. He used to teach at MIT. I actually showed my films at one of his classes when he was in MIT. And the website is great. And for the event on Sunday, I would say go to the Hollywood Theater website, and they have all the information you need about it.
Well, Jailbreak for Joe Gibbons takes place. The event takes place this Sunday, August 30th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Vanessa Rennick, thanks for joining us, and please come back again soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. You're tuned into the Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and in a few minutes, we will be previewing the Portland Film Festival with Festival Director Josh Leake and a few of the filmmakers who are featured. Right now, though, I'm joined by my co-host, Jen Chavez, and Jen is going to be telling us about the controversy surrounding a new Hollywood movie about LGBTQ history.
With social justice movements in the public consciousness like never before, Hollywood is seeing a wave of dramas and biopics about civil rights history. Take Selma, the acclaimed black female-directed film about MLK and the 1965 Voting Rights March, and Suffragette, the upcoming Meryl Streep picture about women's suffrage in Britain. While Roland Emmerich, better known for directing flashy action films such as Independence Day, has opted to join the fray with his upcoming film Stonewall, which retells the story of a seminal moment in LGBTQ history, the Stonewall Riots of 1969. Trans women of color such as Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera played large roles in instigating the uprising and are now celebrated as LGBTQ civil rights heroines. But in some recent histories of Stonewall, and evidently in Emmerich's new film, their participation is being largely erased in favor of a new narrative that puts white, cisgender, gay men front and center. After the release of a trailer populated almost exclusively by white guys, many in the LGBTQ community are crying foul at what Lila Janelle calls the whitewashing and cis-washing of Stonewall's history in Emmerich's new film. Lila, a local journalist and critic who does extensive coverage of trans issues for PQ Monthly, joined me recently to discuss the new Stonewall and the boycott it's inspired. Your upcoming piece for PQ Monthly addresses the cis and whitewashing of the Stonewall story, particularly in the new film dramatization. But before we talk about that, I'd like the unwashed version. You write that early accounts of Stonewall all concur that trans women of color and street youth instigated the protest. And I read a recent interview on Otto Straddle with the trans activist Miss Majors, who took part in Stonewall, where she said, quote, "I'm sorry, but the last time I checked, the only gay people I saw hanging around there were across the street cheering. They were not the ones getting slugged or having stones thrown at them." How and why did trans women play a role in these riots?
From what I've read, the trans women were, they just had less to lose. It wasn't like they could just blend back into cis culture and live like a happy middle class life. I mean, not that if you were a closeted gay or lesbian person, you were very happy, but they couldn't really get by. And so I think because of that, they just responded more strongly to what was happening. They probably had more frustration. They felt more marginalized. They were the ones that took action first, just from what I read. Marsha P. Johnson was a trans woman of color, and she was sort of known to have thrown the first brick, unlike whoever it is in the Stonewall trailer who's throwing the first brick.
Could you, I guess, just tell me a little bit more? You mentioned Marsha P. Johnson, but also about Sylvia Rivera.
Sure.
And Miss Majors, who are other trans women of color who took part.
Yeah, Sylvia Rivera wrote and spoke about her involvement in Stonewall all throughout her life. There's a Sylvia Rivera Way in the neighborhood near where Stonewall is, in Greenwich Village. Miss Major, I guess, from what I read in the Autostraddle, she was arrested at the Stonewall riots. She later went to Attica, and right after the riots happened there, and she said that really politicized her, and now she fights against the prison industrial complex and for rights for trans women of color in the Bay Area. And they've just been completely written out of this story, first in David Carter's book, and they aren't listed on the IMDb page for this movie either.
So we can assume that maybe they don't play roles in the film.
Yeah, yeah. Right, which is, it's just shocking. I mean, Sylvia Rivera is just this kind of well-known, almost, almost like, you know, one of the founding mothers of the trans women movement, and to see her erased is really upsetting. And also, you know, she was a woman of color. All three of those women were women of color. And trans women of color are, you know, still facing so much horrendous violence and discrimination that it's, you know, it's just insulting to see it happen the way it's happening, to see them written out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly, as you're saying, as it appears even from the trailer for Roland Emmerich's new film, the story is not centered around these participants. The protagonist is a fictionalized, conventionally masculine, young, white, gay man named Danny, come to find his fortune in bohemian New York City. We literally see him roll up in this bus with disheveled, dirty blonde hair and white t-shirt looking like Bruce Springsteen. Other fashionable white boys are there to welcome him into the fold. Noticeable even in the trailer is more or less a lack of actors of color and female actors. What can we take away about the message of this film from these details?
I guess what I see is that Roland Emmerich is a gay man, and the writer of the film is a gay, you know, white cis man, and they, I don't know, I just imagine them thinking like, oh, you know, we need a sort of composite character for the lead, and it should be someone everyone can relate to, so I'll make him someone just like me. And that's just, I don't know. I mean, that's been the way of the world in Hollywood for so long, but it feels like that should be changing, especially for a story as important as this, like historical accuracy and just seizing the opportunity to put people who are actually there front and center, people who need representation so badly in Hollywood. So it just seems like a failure in that way.
Mm-hmm. Opposition to this film has been steadily building even since I scheduled this interview with you. It's crazy to have even watched the news in the last week. A boycott has been organized and has caught a lot of attention. What can you tell us about these efforts?
I was kind of surprised by that too. I wrote this piece before the first trailer dropped, and so I just thought I was going to be sort of one cranky trans woman. But there's a boycott that I watched a video with Janet Mock, and she said there were over 23,000 signatures on the boycott, and that was a few days ago. I think this is something that's just really caught people's attention. It just strikes people as racist and transphobic that things would be presented this way. And also, I think if you look at the queer rights movement, there's not a lot of sort of visible moments for trans people or people of color. And so I think these figures that we've been talking about mean a lot to people, and to see them just glossed over and to see this kind of Ken doll put in their place.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. Yes.
I think it's just been insulting to a lot of people, and it's something that people want to rally around. It's sad because the film's in the can. It's not like they're going to go, you know, CGI Sophia Rivera in.
But that would be interesting to see them try.
That would be. Yeah, that would be great. So I think it's just become kind of a flashpoint. I think when Dallas Buyers Club happened, people were like, huh, that doesn't seem right. But there wasn't necessarily a counter-argument to it yet. But I think now there is a counter-argument, and this is kind of how it's being put forward.
Oh, cool.
I was a theater member with Theater Vertigo for...
Oh, those are, yeah, big time.
Did you talk to him?
Thank you, Jen. Jen was talking with Leela Janelle of PQ Monthly about the new movie Stonewall and the uproar that it's been causing. I'm SW Conser, and you're listening to The Film Show. And now we're joined in the studio once again by Portland Film Festival director Josh Leek. Josh, welcome back to KBOO.
Hey, Conch. Thanks for having me.
And you brought some filmmakers with you today. Heather DeMichel is joining us on the phone. Heather is the director of the comedy As Good As You. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Heather.
Hi.
And
Hi,
Josh. Nice to meet you over the phone.
You as well. Thanks.
Can't wait to see you in Portland here.
Awesome. Can't wait to get there.
And here in the studio, we have Steven Richter, director of the opening night feature, Birds of Neptune, as well as the co-stars of Birds of Neptune. They're here as well, Molly Elizabeth Parker and Britt Harris. Welcome,
Hi.
Everyone.
What's up, Portland?
So, So we can talk with Heather in a minute about As Good As You. First, we want to have Josh give a little overview of the festival this year and talk to the Birds of Neptune folks.
Yeah, well, we're excited. Thanks again for having us on. You know, we're the largest festival in the summer, which I always think is the best time to come visit Portland. I was talking with our ticket and PAX box office this morning, and we have over 500 people coming to Portland, filmmakers, speakers, people as far away as Russia and Australia to come celebrate independent film in Portland. And that's pretty awesome. Last year, we had about 247 people come in from outside of the state, and this year, we almost doubled it. So
you're doing a lot of workshops. You're fostering screenwriters and local folks as well?
Yeah, exactly. We've got some of the most famous screenwriters in the business coming up. You've heard, of course, of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I have indeed, yes.
Well, his brother runs one of the most accepted screenplay competitions called The Blue Cat, and he's a screenwriter. In fact, he had a film that just screened at Sundance, and he's coming up and he's going to teach some classes to some of our filmmakers and attendees. So a lot of other people, for example, have you ever heard of the movie Frozen?
I actually happened to see that one, yes.
Yeah, some people know it. Well, we've got the guy that made the song that everyone sang.
Oh, God, no.
And he's coming, and he's going to talk about it. We've got, I mean, the laundry list of you know, professionalism that's coming up to Portland is just amazing. And you know, we have over 220 independent films, something like 40 to 50 world premieres. We're also a part of the Directed by Women movement, which is going on from September 1st to September 14th. We're highlighting films that are directed by women. I think we have some over 70 films that are directed by women in our festival, which is a lot more than the average Hollywood rate of 3%.
Wow. Well, let's start by talking about the opening night film, and that's Birds of Neptune. As I said, we have the director here, Steven Richter, and you've shot this right here in Southeast Portland. This is a film that's sort of a bit of an ensemble piece. Molly and Britt here, they play sisters. And tell us a little bit about the film.
So the film's a dark urban fairy tale. It's about two sisters who have been orphaned, and they grow up alone in their house and in Southeast Portland, and they grow up differently without having parental guidance. A man comes into the situation and kind of wreaks havoc, and that's also played by another local Portlander, Kurt Conroyd.
Now, Molly and Britt, from what I hear, you really came in early on this project. It was like a long, long spooling out project, and you used your theater background to big effect. Both of you have big theater resumes here in town. It's with some of the most prestigious theater companies. And you really kind of helped create these two characters of these sisters and really sort of took the story in a bit in your own direction.
Steven and I worked on this film together for about a year before we started filming. And we took a lot from my personal history with my family, and I personally ended up learning a lot of things that my character Mona would do. I was playing the cello for a long time. That scene ultimately got cut. She does some dancing, and I learned that, and it was a really intense process.
Yeah, it was great. This is Britt speaking here. I play the younger sister, Rachel. And I think that I joined Steven and Molly in the process about a year before filming started. And one of the first things I did with Steven and later with Molly is he had us bring in monologues from the point of view of someone we know very well. So he already started out using what he knew would be familiar to us, our theater background. And so I think I speak for both of us when we say we felt at home and comfortable and excited to work on a project in that way, in that collaborative way.
So did the Portland sort of environment, artistic environment, help you, do something that you might not have been able to do in New York or LA as far as really letting this film grow organically?
I definitely think so. That's what I love about Portland so much is the community feel and the collaborative feel and how artists are fostered. Living in LA, it's definitely a challenge. It's LA and every stereotype that comes with it. And to work on a project like Birds is a dream because of how long we had before shooting the amazing time I had while shooting, and then also the relationship I have with the people and this film, you know, 2 years later after wrapping. And that's a community in itself that I identify with Portland and think is very special.
So Stephen, I won't give away too much about the film, about the direction it goes in, but your experience, is there something sort of Portland-centric about this? You're talking about sort of a dark urban fairy tale. Is there something that people who live here in the Northwest will recognize? Is there a little bit of, you know, maybe David Lynch or Gus Van Sant sensibility in here?
I think so. You know, the Pacific Northwest, I think, is a very mystic place. And you have a lot of those elements in the film. I mean, we have fairy rituals in the film. Sorry, we have fairy rituals in the film. You know, you walk around like Southeast Portland, and you see
fairy wings, yeah,
fairy things, and you see like these altars that are built, you know, around like in the gardens, and
we kind of utilize
that in the film.
So yeah, so this is something that's going to be airing on the opening night, Birds of Neptune. And is this the first festival that you've been trotting this out to?
No, we made our world premiere at Slam Dance.
Oh wow!
In Park City.
Okay.
And since then we're at Arizona International Film Festival at Mammoth Lakes. We're screening at the AMFM Fest actually this Sunday. We have quite a few festivals to come, including...
Northwest Filmmakers Festival might have you as well, if I've heard correctly.
Hopefully. Who knows? I
don't
now
know
they
the
have
news
to.
Yet.
Now they have to. Okay.
We have some,
I might have
some,
jumped the gun on that. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
We have some international premieres coming up that we can't announce at this point, but
right.
They're...
And I think
a couple big ones.
A good thing to note is I was at the world premiere for their festival or their festival run in Park City, and even though this film was made in Portland, which is a great connection for any film for us to play, it holds up on its own. You know, we'd play it even if it wasn't made in here in Portland. So, and you know, I think it's got a lot of what is great about independent film, and you don't see it in Hollywood films, but you're going to see it here. And I think Birds of Neptune, and as well as GRU PDX, which is our opening night documentary, are two great independent films that showcase a lot about Portland. You know, this is a narrative, which means, of course, it's not real. And then we have GRU PDX, which is a documentary, which is about pretty much every single band in the city. So there's a lot to choose from.
Well, now that we've slammed LA a little bit, let's talk with Heather DeMichel, and you can get to defend your hometown here. Heather, now I understand that your comedy that's coming out, As Good As You, it's going to be playing at the Portland Film Festival. You've written this with Gretchen Mitchell-Feld, and so you've had a long resume yourself. You were managing director of the Groundlings, the really amazing long-running improv troupe in LA.
I'm here right now.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, whoop, whoop. I am.
So tell us about the film, As Good As You.
Yeah, thank you. So Gretchen Michaelfeld actually wrote the screenplay. I was the director, but we are longtime collaborators. And, you know, it's about the messiness of grief. And it happens to be quite funny. We call it a serious comedy about grief because, though there is a lot of humor, it's definitely, I don't know if I would say it's a comedy first, but when you start to delve into some of the themes that we get into, there's some comedy that finds its way through. But it's about a woman who's grieving the loss of her wife, and she decides she wants to fulfill one of their dreams on her own and asks her late wife's brother to be her sperm donor. And so, you know, it delves into how far we'll go to not be alone and how ridiculous the process can be, even if you're, especially if you're over 40 and you're lesbian, to try and get pregnant through artificial insemination. And, you know, that's where some of the comedy comes in.
So, yeah, it's called a serious comedy. And I understand the screenplay for the film was inspired by Beatriz Terry Lopez, the screenwriter's late wife. That would be Gretchen Michaelfeld's late wife. What can you tell us about how Ms. Lopez's life informed the film?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is she did pass away very sadly 3 years ago from cancer, and every single person that was involved in this film, including Annie Potts, who's one of our leading ladies, had worked with her and loved her deeply. She was a director and writer in New York and very, very dear friend of mine. And so the film was created in her honor and inspired by some things that had happened in her life with Gretchen. And at the same time, I was going through a process of trying to become pregnant through artificial insemination, and you know, Gretchen was losing her life, and there was all of this sort of this absurdity almost in what happens when we're depressed, when we're grieving, when the people that we need the most we're losing. And out of this actually came this screenplay and this story that kind of was a hybrid of everything that was going on. It's complete fiction, but all these things were happening at the same time. And and she actually has that baby that was a family member, came from the family member's sperm. So the story goes in a different path, but it gave us a lot of fodder, let's say, for a story.
Well, ideally, yeah, ideally, even though it's a comedy, maybe this will open up some doors for other LGBT women who are looking to, you know, expand their options as far as
totally,
yeah, artificial insemination and all that.
It'll tell you what to watch out for and yeah. When's the right time, certainly. Yeah.
So now, is this a premiere? Is this the first place that As Good As You is playing? Is at the Portland Film Festival?
It is. The film was just completed this summer, so we're really stoked with the timing.
It's an honor for us.
It's going to be our world premiere. And we're all such huge fans of Portland. The writer actually was born in Portland. I'm just a huge fan of the city, and I feel like it's the perfect place to launch a quirky story like this one. I feel like there's a nice alignment there, so we're really thrilled to be
We've done really well with quirky comedies. Our world premiere last year of Sex Ed, it's now, you know, got distribution, went out theatrically, and is now on Netflix, so hopefully we continue that train. And we're just excited and honored that you'd screen with us. We know you must have a lot of different opportunities out there, and we're the little festival up here in Portland, but we have big aspirations, and we just, you know, are so excited to screen your film, and thank you so much.
Yes, yes, Heather DeMichelle, thank you so much,
thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing you at the Portland Film Festival.
Thanks, everyone. See you soon.
So, Josh, before we go, tell us again how people can find out information about the festival and everything that's coming up.
Good question. PortlandFilmFestival.com. You can buy tickets or passes. In fact, we have our schedule up so you can download it. This year, we're making a conscious effort to recycle at all of our different venues to be what we call a zero waste festival. May not actually happen, but we're going to try to do a little bit better every time. So instead of picking up one of those programs, why not download it from our website? It's PortlandFilmFestival.com. A lot of amazing things. We've got the Fabricator, one of the people on the team that created Yoda, is coming to talk. She also did, Wendy Froud did Labyrinth, and we're doing a special screening of The Dark Crystal. We've got the cinematographer from Hustle and Flow coming up to do a special talk, which I love that movie. It's their 10-year anniversary. Yeah. I can go on and on.
Yeah, you can go on, but we have to thank Stephen Richter and Molly
thank
and
you.
Britt. Thank you so much for
thank
coming
you.
In.
Thanks
and,
for having us.
And we'll.
Can I say one last thing?
Oh, go ahead.
We have a world headquarters for the festival, which is opening all week from 11 to 5. You can come down and get your picture in front of the red carpet. It's located at the old P.F. Chang space in the Pearl District, which is 1139 Northwest Cooch Street. Come on down, buy some merchandise, get some tickets, find out about the festival.
Excellent. Now let's join up with Jen, who has this month's film events calendar.
Here's a list of film events coming up in the Portland area in the next month. Tonight, August 27th, marks the closing night of the Northwest Film Center's summer outdoor screening series, Top Down Rooftop Cinema. Monty Python's The Meaning of Life will screen at dusk atop the roof of Hotel Deluxe's downtown parking garage overlooking the city. Doors open at 7 p.m. with music at 8 p.m. prior to showtime. More info at nwfilm.org. And another outdoor screening series from the folks at the Northwest Film Center kicks off tonight and runs through Monday the 31st. Drive-in at Zidell Yards. Viewers are welcomed by car, bike, or foot each night to view films ranging from classic Hitchcock to 80s and 90s cult favorites underneath the Ross Island Bridge. Gates open at 7, films at dusk. Details at nwfilm.org. Kicking off September 1st and running through the 15th, the Clinton Street Theater is celebrating female filmmakers by joining in a global film viewing party called Directed by Women. They'll screen 5 films by women, including I Am Thalente as part of the Portland Film Festival, and Arresting Power, the documentary on police violence in Portland, co-directed by KABU's own Erin Yenke, as part of the monthly KABU at the Clinton series. Details available at cstpdx.com. Two follow-up events coming up around this month's 48-hour film project, where teams of filmmakers wrote, shot, and edited short films over the course of one weekend. On September 2nd at 7 p.m., the Hollywood Theater will host the Best of the 48-Hour Film Project, highlighting 13 films and culminating in Best of Portland Awards. And on September 5th at noon, the Clinton Street Theater will screen the 48-Hour Film Project, A Tale of Two Cities, featuring highlighted works from Portland and Baltimore, 2007 to present. More info at hollywoodtheater.org and cstpdx.com. On September 11th at 7 p.m., the Hollywood Theater presents the Best of the Northwest Animation Festival, featuring audience favorites from this spring's showcase of over 270 animated films. Award winners will be announced. More info at nwanimationfest.org. Also at the Hollywood Theater from September 18th through the 20th, Noir City Portland showcases noir classics on 35mm with multiple afternoon and evening screenings each day. Co-presented by the Film Noir Foundation and hosted by noir historian Eddie Muller. Details at hollywoodtheater.org. Well, that about wraps it up. Have a great month, folks.
Jen, thank you, Jen. And thanks to our guests today, Vanessa Rennick, Lila Janelle, Stephen Richter, Heather DeMichel, and Josh Leek. Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at @KBOOFilmShow. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.